Come with me, I said. Helen's eyes were very large as she smiled that smile I knew so well. I'll get my coat, she murmured. This wasn't really me, I thought, standing on the hall carpet watching Helen trotting quickly up the stairs, but I had to believe it as she reappeared on the landing, pulling on a coat. Outside on the cobbles of the marketplace, my car too appeared to be taken by surprise because it roared into life at the first touch of the starter. I had to go back to the surgery for my whelping instruments, and in the silent, moonlit street we got out and opened the big white door to Skeldale House. And once in the passage, it was the most natural thing in the world to take her in my arms and kiss her gratefully and unhurriedly. I had waited a long time for this, and the minutes flowed past unnoticed as we stood there, our feet on the black and red 18th century tiles, our heads almost touching the vast picture of the death of Nelson which dominated the entrance. We kissed again at the first bend of the passage under the companion picture of the meeting of Wellington and Blücher at Waterloo. We kissed at the second bend by the tall cupboard where Siegfried kept his riding coats and boots. We kissed in the dispensary in between searching for my instruments. Then we tried it out in the garden, and this was the best of all, with the flowers still expectant in the moonlight, and the fragrance of the moist earth and grass rising about us. I have never driven so slowly to a case. About 10 miles an hour, with Helen's head on my shoulder, and all the scents of spring drifting in through the open window. And it was like sailing from stormy seas into a sweet, safe harbour, like coming home. The light in the cottage window was the only one showing in the sleeping village, and when I knocked at the door, Bert Chapman answered. Bert was a council roadman, one of the breed for whom I felt an abiding affinity. The councilmen were my brethren of the roads. Like me, they spent most of their lives on the lonely byways around Derby, and I saw them most days of the week, repairing the tarmac, cutting back the grass verges in the summer, gritting and snow ploughing in the winter. And when they spotted me driving past, they would grin cheerfully and wave as if the very sight of me had made their day. I don't know whether they were specially picked for good nature, but I don't think I've ever met a more equable body of men. One old farmer remarked sourly to me once, "There's no wonder the buggers are happy, they've got nought to do." An exaggeration, of course, but I knew how he felt. Compared with farming, every other job was easy. I had seen Bert Chapman just a day or two ago, sitting on a grassy bank, his shovel by his side, a vast sandwich in his hand. He had raised a corded forearm in salute, a broad smile bisecting his round, sun-reddened face. He had looked eternally carefree, but tonight his smile was strained. "Look, I'm sorry to bother you this late, Mr. Harriet," he said as he ushered us into the house, "but I'm getting a bit worried about Susie. Her pups are due, and she's been making a bed for them and messing about all day, but now it's happened. I was going to leave her till morning, but about midnight she started panting like hell. I don't like the look of her." Susie was one of my regular patients. A big, burly master was always bringing her to the surgery, a little shamefaced at his solicitude, and when I saw him sitting in the waiting room looking strangely out of place among the ladies with their pets, he usually said, "Mrs. asked me to bring Susie." But it was a transparent excuse. "She's not but a little mongrel, but very faithful," Bert said, still apologetic, but I could understand how he felt about Susie, a shaggy little ragamuffin whose only wile was to put her paws on my knees and laugh up into my face with her tail lashing. I found her irresistible. But she was a very different character tonight. As we went into the living room of the cottage, the little animal crept from her basket, gave a single, indeterminate wag of her tail, then stood miserably in the middle of the floor, her ribs heaving. As I bent to examine her, she turned a wide, panting mouth and anxious eyes up to me. I ran my hand over her abdomen. I don't think I have ever felt a more bloated little dog. She was as round as a football, absolutely bulging with pups, ready to pop, but nothing was happening.
"And what do you think?"
Bert's face was haggard under his sunburn, and he touched the dog's head briefly with a big, calloused hand. "I don't know yet, Bert," I said. "I'll have to have a feel inside. Bring me some hot water, will you?" I added some antiseptic to the water, soaped my hand, and with one finger carefully explored the vagina. There was a pup there, all right. My fingertip brushed across the nostrils, the tiny mouth and tongue, but he was jammed in that passage like a cork in a bottle. Squatting back on my heels, I turned to the Chapmans. I'm afraid there's a big pup stuck fast. I have a feeling that if we could get rid of this chap, the others would come away. They'd probably be smaller.
Is there any way of shifting him, Mr. Elliot? Bert asked.
I paused for a moment. I'm going to put forceps on his head and see if he'll move. I don't like using forceps, but I'm going to have one careful try, and if it doesn't work, I'll have to take him back to the surgery for a caesarean.
An operation?
Bert said hollowly. He gulped and glanced fearfully at his wife. Like many big men, he had married a tiny woman. And at this moment, Mrs. Chapman looked even smaller than her 4'11" as she huddled in her chair and stared at me with wide eyes.
Oh, I wish we'd never had a mated, she wailed, wringing her hands. I told Bert 5 years old was too late for a first litter, but he wouldn't listen, and now we're maybe going to lose her.
I hastened to reassure her. No, she isn't too old, and everything may be all right. Just let's see how we get on, eh? I boiled the instrument for a few minutes on the stove, then knelt behind my patient again. I poised the forceps for a moment, and at a flash of steel a grey tinge crept under Bert's sunburn, and his wife coiled herself into a ball in a chair. Obviously they were non-starters as assistants, so Helen held Susie's head while I once more reached in towards the pup. There was desperately little room, but I managed to direct the forceps along my finger till they touched the nose. Then, very gingerly, I opened the jaws and pushed them forward with the very gentlest pressure until I was able to clamp them onto either side of the head. I'd soon know now. In a situation like this, you can't do any pulling and you can only try to ease the thing along. This I did, and I fancied I felt just a bit of movement. I tried again, and there was no doubt about it, the pup was coming towards me. Susie, too, appeared to sense that things were taking a turn for the better. She cast off her apathy and began to strain lustily.